I think they have started the time on already, so let's get started.
Right. So guys, good afternoon. No. This is not what I'm expecting. One more time for me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon!
Awesome. This is what I want to hear. I know the session is after lunch. I know carbs start kicking. So this is an interactive session, right? So without you, the session would not be as good as, you know, what I'm saying. So please, please interrupt us and ask as much as you want questions. This is one of the, what can I say, in lack of a better word, this is one of the historical moments that get one Shirish with me talking on a DPM session. He is a god of DPM, right? You guys, if you have any questions, I have a bunch. So my name is Islam Goma. I'm a System Center MVP, and I'm actually very happy to say that I'm joined with Shirish Dubey. He's a principal at GPM. I will introduce Shirish in 1 minute, and I'll let him, after that, introduce himself. Shirish joined the DPM team 6 months ago. On the link call, second day, he said, "Let's talk to the MVP." And we told him, "Shirish, we want to have these features to be delivered in next rollup update." Well, he said he made it right. Support, we'll talk about what happened in the rollup update too. So he called back and said, "Okay, I did what you want, you guys, and more." So I said, No. The bar was here, now we're expecting more from you, right? So what the session overview today is, we're going to know how DPM can leverage scale and reliable backup. DPM has been always supporting small and medium and large enterprises and hosters. First, an always common feature that everyone looking for in DPM is what? Dedupe. Everyone's saying, "Why I'm running with this fat storage? I want a dedupe on my DPM." Honestly, storage is expensive. We need to dedupe it. Then we need to talk about actually DPM secondary protection in Azure. Then I'll come back after she finishes talk, and I'll talk about actually how is DPM helping enterprise, and I'm talking about enterprise. If you know what I'm talking about, enterprise, which actually people, they're looking for high availability and solution to back up their HA. And I really need your help in the last item with actually protecting workload running in Azure IaaS, right? So at some point, we're going to bundle together. Again, it's this guy to support my request. So please, I want to hear a big applause for Shirish. Shirish.
Okay, thank you. That's a very warm welcome.
No problem.
I don't know about the last point you said there. That wasn't what we talked about.
Well, this is what you're going to do.
Okay. Quick intro about myself. So I've been in Microsoft about 7 years, joined Microsoft after working for almost 2 decades in Intel. In Microsoft, I had the fortune to ship actually 4 products, and they fell into 2 buckets. One that I call brand new product, getting to do them for the first time, or what they call in engineering version 1 products. And then the second category, which is bring product back from the dead. So the first two, the exciting ones, Hyper-V Replica, yeah, that was a product that I conceived and built. And I was very proud to see it demoed in the keynote with it going to Azure. The underlying technology to replicate VM, the 30 seconds to Azure, I think that was pretty cool. And something we actually beat our competitor to it. That was one. The second one was, I don't know if you guys know XP Mode in Windows 7. Okay, that was, again, a version 1 product. It was an interesting product. It was a version 1, and that ended after that. The reason it was built was a scenario to help people move to Windows 7 and still maintain XP Mode compat. So it built a virtualization layer that would give them a seamless experience when they launched their Windows 7 devices. XP would show up just like another app. So any app they had on XP would just look like a normal Windows 7 app. Then coming to the product, bringing back from the dead, JavaScript. I know back in IE8 time, they realized that the browser was being used as a development platform for much more than it was used for. So things like application like Gmail that leveraged JavaScript extensively, and the response time for the apps that way wasn't very good. So one of the things that they wanted to invest, along with other things like HTML5 and things, was JavaScript. So the team that built the version in JavaScript in IE8 was also something that my team shipped. So that was a product bringing back from the dead. And now DPM, I joined in last year, October, sort of falls in that category in the sense last 2 years, we haven't really invested a whole lot into it. It sort of kept running on its momentum and all the features it has built so far. And there's still a lot of people using it out there. But in terms of net R&D investment over the last couple of years, wasn't a whole lot. So I put that in the same bucket of bringing products from the dead. The different challenges in each kind, I think I like both. I'll talk a bit about why DPM is relevant now and why I'm excited about this journey. So backup products are interesting. They're almost like religion. People don't like changing them unless there's something else going on. It's like an infrastructure that people don't look at changing. They are happy with it, and yes, another nice product comes up that has a nice feature that's not really compelling enough for people to look for a different solution. But if there's some inflection going on which causes them to think about the infrastructure as a whole, that makes it interesting. So there's two going on right now. There's a cloud inflection going on, and there's also virtualization. Both of these, a lot of people I'm talking to at the booth over the last couple of days, I've been asking, hey, this is a good time for me to look at it. And in that context, what do I do about my backup? So it becomes an interesting and current conversation. So that's interesting. The second one is the decision was made before my time, actually, was a very good decision, was to make DPM from a standalone product to being part of System Center. And the interesting part about that is it takes a while before the market reacts to a change like that. Now the conversation that I'm hearing is more like, hey, instead of why are you not using, you know, what is DPM versus some other product? It's like, hey, I already have a backup product with my System Center license. Why am I not using it? So whether or not people end up using DPM could change, but at least it's part of the conversation. And lastly, it's what I call the service providers. I've been meeting a lot of them over the last couple of days, and one of the things that a service provider cares a lot about is their SLA, and they, in fact, some of them even have financial backing behind their SLAs. And one thing that you need to have when you have an SLA is how well can you control your suppliers? And the fewer vendors they have to control, the more predictable the SLA. So in that context, they prefer to work with one vendor to solve all their needs. They're not necessarily looking for best-of-breed solutions for each problem that they have. This is a new trend. This is the market that we are going after. This is where the growth is. So this has also become very interesting. And I have a quote to share with you of a customer like that who actually made the same point that I much rather prefer a solution like that than going for the maybe even a slightly better solution, but it's a point solution from a different vendor. So these three things are really helping make DPM relevant in the conversation. So I'm really excited about this and hoping I can take some of you guys along this journey. Okay, let me quickly recap the journey so far. So as I said, we haven't invested a whole lot, like in terms of net investment, but there is very definitive things we have done in a certain area, which I call private cloud protection. Starting from 2012 R2, we said, you know, DPM is doing a good job on supporting other workloads in Microsoft. Let's try and focus a lot on scale, a private cloud scale. So in 2012, the first thing we did is managing DPM at scale. We had centralized management. This allows you to manage multiple DPM servers in one console. Then in SP1, we added what I call native support for Hyper-V, things like Hyper-V deployments in a cluster of CSV or SMB. We support backing up of that. That we added in SP1. We also added support for VM migration. Previously, if you migrate a VM, you have to reestablish protection. This now seamlessly works without admin intervention. And in R2, I like Brad used the term called hyperscale. This is like you start backing up VMs, you know, you have service provider, you bought a bunch of hardware, you want to maximize the number of VMs you can host on it. And they also need protection. It's a given for all these virtual machines. So how do you do that reliably at scale is the area that we started to focus on in the last 6 months. And we're going to talk more about what we're going to do. The demo I show you is also going to focus more on what we have done to improve this even more. And yeah, Linux backup, that's also something we added, where Linux is now a first-class guest in our environment. We want to make sure we back them up without shutting them off. Okay, this is a familiar picture to most of you. This is the traditional deployment that you'd see Hyper-V over CSV, where you have typically a CSV that's built on top of a SAN device. That's the current sort of, I would say, deployment. 80% of the deployment in DPM we see is deployed this way. What's an emerging trend, though, is the picture to the right. This is what's going on. Starting 2012, Windows Server did a lot of enhancement in the stack that allows it to create what I call commodity storage. And in fact, at a booth, if you guys didn't get a chance to look at, there's a company called DataOn that I happened to look at. They actually announced this thing last decade, and now they're selling it apparently very well. And it's essentially a cluster in a box which has storage in it, about 23 terabytes of storage configured like this. Pretty cheap. For the most applications, it gets by what you need. So this is the emerging trend in the right, and this is where we see the future going in terms of people deploying this more and more, because the cost economics of the storage really makes it very compelling. So in this environment, clearly, one thing that is a given, people are going to run a lot of virtual machines. Some customers talk to, they want about, at least in a cluster like that, maybe 500-600 VMs, maybe 1,000 VMs that they want to run. And one thing that they expect from backup is, I don't want to have to go monitor it. I need it for all the VMs. I need to work. And as long as you can meet the SLA of once a day backup, I think people are happy. Is there anything else somebody want to guess what's also needed? I think anybody wants to guess what else? If you look at the storage topology on the right, what is the one thing that DPM storage needs to absolutely do?
I just said it. Awesome. What again? Again? Support means this. Support means this. Every customer we go talk to him, always dedupe, dedupe, dedupe. Can you get dedupe? Please?
Actually, dedupe is built by the Windows team, Windows Server team, File Server team. And in fact, I was going to have the GPM, again, the nice guy to bend his ear, he's a GPM of that team, to come and talk about dedupe in this session. Unfortunately, I don't know how, but they managed to create overlaps in all of our sessions. There's another DPM session going on right now. In fact, that's one of the reasons why my demo may not work. HA, highly available sessions. And the dedupe guy also has a conflict. So, but anyway, he's very committed. Dedupe was actually released with 2012. Is that a question here? Oh. Okay, before I talk about dedupe, this is a code that I promised I'll share. This is a customer who's a service provider in Sweden, reached out to us sometime in January and said he's having a lot of problems with Hyper-V backup. I think that's a common thread that I heard from many MVPs when I first came on board. Hyper-V backup sucks. And he was pretty emphatic in that statement. So we said, well, is it possible for you to move to 2012 R2? And he did, actually. And you know, we didn't hear from him for about 2 to 3 months. And just a few weeks before TechEd, he just sent an email saying, hey, you know what? Everything started working. He has about 11-node cluster with about 600 VMs. And he said, you know, I just want to thank your team for suggesting that, and things are working. And this is the quote that he sent. I promise you, I did not ask for it. It just came in the email. I just asked him, can I use it for my TechEd talk? Because it's been a long time since somebody said something nice about DPM. So
it has been long stories. Yeah.
So I share that with you guys as well, with his permission. Okay, so I'll talk a bit about dedupe. So this is the deployment that we want to support in dedupe, as I mentioned. It's the scale-out file server deployment where we want to accrue the benefits at a storage layer. So imagine your Hyper-V cluster is actually talking to a storage layer, much like you talk to a SAN. In that environment, we want to support dedupe. There are some technicalities in how it will work. DPM has to run virtual. That's one requirement. And second is basically each VHD file that we'll create. Again, these are limitations in how dedupe is designed to work right now. It has a 1 terabyte file limit that will dedupe. So the DPM storage VHDs have to be 1 TB right now. I'm working very closely with them to increase that over time. That doesn't necessarily mean you can only protect VMs with 1 TB. It simply means that if you had a large data set that exceeded the number of VHDs you could attach to a DPM server, which currently happens to be about 23, that is a tested limit, you couldn't protect something bigger than 23 terabytes. You wouldn't be able to do that. But I think that's a limit that we're constantly going to work on and improve. This is a quick primer on how dedupe works. You guys all pretty much know what dedupe does. But just to call out a few things which are different, this is a lazy dedupe in the sense it's post-processes. It doesn't do it online. We believe in this scenario that's a better model because you can let dedupe run its full course once the backup is completed. So that's how we work. And it is intensive. So we need to make sure it finishes the job before the next backup kicks in. So here's a scenario which shows the backup volume that you run dedupe on after backup is completed. At a very, very high level, it simply chunks the volume up into blocks that are 64 KB size or could be configured to either a little bit smaller or a little bit bigger. And then it looks for, first thing it does, it compresses each of the blocks. And then it looks for duplicates. and it replaces each duplicate block with a pointer or a reference, and basically doesn't keep the rest of the blocks. It what is called optimizes them. So this is what a picture you might get after it does dedupe. And then the next time around the backup comes, all the new blocks get into the churn area, and then again it re-optimizes the new data that came in. That's roughly how it works. In 2012, the dedupe team focused heavily on BDI as a workload, and they got up to 70% savings. With backup, it's an interesting application from a dedupe algorithm perspective because it sends net changes in a burst during the backup window, and that's somewhat different than the actual production I/O that's going on when the workload is actually running. So they have to optimize it differently. We are working with the team very closely. They've already fixed a bunch of things both in their stack as well as in NTFS. And they're still working on it. We haven't quite declared we are ready yet. So in terms of availability, whatever we are doing in dedupe, we want to make sure it accrues to Windows 2012 R2. So it's not like you have to wait for the next release of Windows to get it. But so we will make it available as part of updates, like QFEs, if you will, for Windows. And for DPM, we're going to make them available as part of update rollups. So our hope is to get all of this ready by, you know, late summer this year, to get essentially all the reliability work that I'll just demo, as well as all the dedupe that we have to optimize for backup storage. That's our goal right now, to get that out there by that time. This is a departure from the past. We used to always talk about stuff that's already shipping. This is actually not there yet. So we'll have to wait till July to actually try this out, although Islam has a private bit that he could try it out. OK, so let me switch to a demo. Before I show the demo, I'll actually tell you the setup. This is the setup that we have used to show the reliability at scale. You have a compute cluster with 11 nodes, roughly about 500 VMs being protected, and a SOFS storage cluster that has about 40 TB that is roughly shared for 24 TB for production data and about 14 or 16 for the backup. And the DPM configuration to manage that is two servers that's managing this or doing the protection for this. So let me switch here down to, this is one. Okay, so let me see, is it already here? Okay, so it kicked out. So yeah, we have it synchronized, so my demo will finish and then he'll start. So looks like he was testing. Okay, so here you see, can you guys see it? Okay. All right, so this is the protection. This is going into the DPM console of one of the servers. As you can see, it's protecting around 247 VMs, and the other DPM server protects just as many, so there were 500 VMs being protected. And you can see the way we have done this. This is what I call a scale setup. The goal I've set for my team is that I want you to be able to back up a daily backup for the entire capacity of the scale setup for 6 months with no failures that are not retryable and succeed after retries. So essentially at the end of 6 months, you can say, you know, I have reliable backup. That's the sort of the goal I've set for my team. So obviously they're not going to do a daily backup. They'll do many backups during the day to get that number because we can't wait 6 months for the release. So we're going to pack them in a day's backup. So what you see over here is a backup schedule that's every 3 hours. So in a day, you get 8 backups. So if you do that, this setup is live. It's actually from our lab. So we have still work in progress. What you're seeing is essentially 8 backups for all of VMs. So it's essentially backup for a week. That's how many jobs that have been scheduled right now. So you can see the schedule here, 2:30, 5:30, 8:30, and so on. These are all backup jobs for all these VMs. Let me show you the monitoring tab and talk about this jump. Okay, before I show you the monitoring, I will give you a little bit of what's running in these VMs. So what we have done is these VMs are actually running production workloads like SQL, file server, Exchange. We use simulators to run these workloads in these VMs. So they're actually creating real churn. These are not dummy VMs. They're actually what you might expect in a typical deployment. So that's what's running in these VMs. And as I mentioned, they're being backed up every 3 hours. So as you can imagine, there are a lot of jobs. If I go to day 5, you can see there are 1,700 jobs that were scheduled. And there are some that failed. And let's look at them. Let me show you a particular VM why this is an important one. So if you look at failed, so you'll see two kinds of jobs, either a consistency check job or a recovery job. For whatever reason, if a job fails, let's say in this SOFS cluster, the network storage is, the storage is accessed over the network. And if DPM sees any sort of unavailability, even for a short time, it basically thinks that I've lost my storage. So I lost my tracking. So it puts the VM into a CC mode. So it does a consistency check. So, but it's not a failed job. It called that particular job failed, but it puts it in a retry queue and it tries it again. So at the end of the day, you want to make sure that all your jobs are retried. So if you take a look at, let's say, a particular job here, let's say 396, if I look at that one, it says that a recovery point could be created. It failed, and then it put it in a job queue right here, and you can see that it was tried 20 minutes later, and it succeeded. So essentially, at the end of the day, what the customers are looking for is, can I get my backups to just work? I don't have to go and monitor all these. I don't want to go see why something failed. It should just keep working. So that's our goal for the team. It's like set and forget, and it should just keep on running. So there's an example of something that failed, but it retried and it succeeded. So at the end of the day, you don't need to worry about that. That's the goal for what we call a reliable backup. Okay? So that's the demo for the scale setup. Any questions on that? SOFS. I'm sorry? From each cluster node. So as I was mentioning, each protected entity is backing up 8 times a day. So each VM, so depending on where the VM is hosted, but all the backups are happening on the storage cluster. So it's not like in the CSV case, you have basically compute cycles when storage were all accessed through the cluster. In this case, it's disaggregated. So all your backups are running on the storage cluster. So all the dedupe I/O, all the backup I/O, everything is happening on the storage cluster. Yeah, you can. You'll have to put an SOFS head on the SAN device, and you can still do that. Well, ideally you won't. I mean, if you're trying to do that, I would question why. Is it give you more resiliency, or CSV would work just fine in a SAN setup? The reason we thought SOFS would be a good thing for you to try is you wanted to use something like JBOD-based storage, like cheaper SAS storage devices that you would actually do scale-out file server and get some cost benefits. We actually, in our test environment, use a SAN to do testing, but I don't think as a deployment I would recommend that. Okay. All right, so the other feature I want to spend a bit of time talking about is Windows Azure Backup. Actually, it's not called that anymore. It's got a new name. I don't know what it is yet, but it's a new name. Is it? Okay, was it announced somewhere?
It's Azure Backup.
Microsoft has to be Microsoft something.
It's Azure Backup.
Okay, so this was actually a product that was in preview since April 2013, and then it was pre-announced actually in the last decade. And then we had the GA happen in October of 2013. It's been a very successful product so far. Initial version was targeted at backing up Windows servers. And then I think we also added DPM protection to it for secondary protection. So I'll focus more on the second part. I think this is a slide we had in the value prop deck that I stole from. It sort of talks about why cloud storage is sort of a very easy answer when it comes to backup storage. It is something that you need. It is something that you want to spend as little on, and you want to make sure it's reliable and you have it when you need it. And this is a good scenario for that. The other thing that I've also heard people is most of the data that you need access to, which is called hot data, is something that is only 20% of your working set is actually what you need to be on-prem. Most of the rest of the data can be in the cloud, because you don't really need to access it. I think those things really make this as a very, very good opportunity, if you will, to to leverage Azure for. So we took that approach and we decided to build a capability to allow you to back up these servers into Azure. So we started with these things that you can protect. You can protect a Windows server that's directly to Azure. You can protect it. You can also protect the Server Essentials queue. And if you're using DPM, you can protect all the DPM protected sources as a secondary protection in Azure. And the way we built that, and I'll talk a bit about in the demo, is a very seamless extension to disk, tape, and Azure. So it's like really easy to use, and a good testament to that is 60% of the data that's actually coming into our vault is coming from DPM customers, the top guys, the customer that send large amounts of data. 60% of them are actually DPM customers. So what's the one thing that you guys know about Azure backup that's not quite what it needs to be? Thank you. Yes.
Would you listen to our practice? My goodness.
Yeah, so yes, long-term retention is an area that we need to work on. I think we have acknowledged that. There's work going on in the team right now. Personally, I felt if I had a decision to make when I released the product, I wouldn't have released it without this. If you wake somebody up from their sleep and say, hey, what do you need Azure for? I need to put my data on, then forget about it, right? This 120 days wasn't the right thing to have started. But, you know, we're going to do our job to fix it. This is really the two business drivers for long-term retention. And I want to spend some time showing you what a retention policy might look like to highlight that the 120 points wasn't the problem. The problem was, what was it used for? This is what a typical LTR policy could be constructed for 100 years. You could have a daily backup for 1 week, that you take up 7 points for that. Then you do weekly backup for the first month. You would need 3 additional points for that for the 3 more weeks in the month. Then you could do monthly backup for the first year. You would need 11 for that because of the 11 months of the year. And then you would do 99 points for the remaining 99 years. If you add all those up, you get 120. The reason I did that math for you is this was what, when Azure team decided to have a limit on how many snapshots you could create, this is the reason why they came up with the math. They're saying anybody could build a policy like this using snapshots and give you 100 years of retention. There's a small hitch, though. We need to actually build some capability in the product to do what is called GFS, grandfather, father, son, where each recovery point actually covers more duration of time, and the older they get, the more data they hold. And that is the capability that we're actually in the process of building right now. And my hope is that we can release it in this calendar year. But I can't tell you exactly which date it is, but it needs to happen because this is really, we're hearing that loud and clear from pretty much every customer that wants to use Azure. So here's the goal. So we want to make it really a viable target for long-term protection. Let me switch to a quick demo on this. How are we doing on time? I think we're doing okay on time. Okay. Let me show you a demo of that. This is the... Okay, so here's a DPM server that I've set up that is already configured to protect what it is protecting on-prem to Azure. And as I mentioned earlier, we have done a very seamless extension of adding an online endpoint to it, much like how we did in Hyper-V Replica. If you guys saw that session, you basically have another endpoint. Previously, in the first release, we did enterprise to enterprise, and now we added Azure as just another endpoint. So it's a similar interface you'll see here as well. So if you right-click on this protection group, you can see right now it's only using short-term disk down here. That's all the protection you have set up. So you can just go right-click here. You can modify the protection group, and you can just say next, and there you go. So right below your disk option, you can set up online protection, and you can do that. This is the PG, run a consistency check. Okay, so this is when you get to set the policy for what you protect to Azure. So you can go to 120 days, or 120 points. But if you notice, you can only select daily or weekly. And then you can choose your retention point, or rather the time that you want to actually do it. And you can do it up to 2 times a day. And then you're done. You pretty much, Yeah, the reason is because I took 2 points, and I took 120 over there, so you're doing what you're supposed to do. Yes. I'm sorry, could you repeat a question? This GUI is running, actually, if you guys heard the question, she's asking, if you are a service provider, who's actually running this GUI to enable the protection? The way that it works is the person that is doing the administration of your backup. So who has access to your DPM server is who's running. It typically would be the service provider's admin who would set up that policy.
Can I add something on this?
Yeah.
So last tech ed, actually, during the presentation, what we have done a self-service portal for service provider, right? And part of the self-service provider, we showed actually that we can offer multiple protections with actually gold, silver, platinum. And that actually that's only the customer has to go on the service manager portal and choose, I want to backup my stuff, my workload with a platinum, which is actually online backup. The plumbing behind that was actually going from service manager, going to orchestrator, going to talk to DPM, do all the work, and all of this actually can be scripted. So as Shree said, actually either the system admin can do that by the phone, or actually if this portal already exists, and for the service provider, it can actually give you the independency or the independent to do this self-service. Does this answer your question? Thank you.
Okay. One other point I want to talk about is people are concerned. I was talking to you yesterday about a guy that says, I want to make sure that you know, how safe is my data when I protect it to Azure? So we spend a lot of time thinking about that. All the encryption that you do stays on-prem. You actually have the passphrase, and if you lose it, God help you, because we can't get you the data back even if you call Microsoft. We encrypt the data on source before we send it. It is encrypted in transit using HTTPS, and it's encrypted at source, at rest, I mean, sorry. So when it's stored in Azure. So pretty much you get to encrypt your data before you send it to Azure, and it's encrypted all the way, and it also at rest. So it's very secure in terms of your access to the data. Only you have access to the data in Azure. Yes?
For a business that doesn't have this configuration
today, the announcement of Azure Site Recovery, where would you recommend people actually find it? Do I have functionality in Azure Site
Recovery, like
high level resources
and stuff, that
I might get from DPM? That's a great question. The question was, if I repeat, there's also an announcement of Hyper-V Recovery Manager allows you to protect virtual machines in Azure, and what's the difference between that and, let's say, DPM to Azure that also allows you to protect VMs. I would say that it depends on what you're trying to do. If all you're trying to do is, you know, what I call data availability, your poor man's DR is I just need to get my data when I need it, but I don't want business continuity beyond that, then I would use backup, this capability. But if you want the ability to run your service in Azure when you actually have a failover, that's when you use Hyper-V Recovery Manager. It's a DR solution which gives you business continuity. It's a spectrum. So the capability you saw in the preview was if you had, let's say, a 3-tier application composed of multiple VMs, you created a recovery plan, you configured all of that. If you had a disaster, you could pretty much, with a click, start running that application in Azure. As opposed to if you had data, you'd have to first get all the data down, do a restore in the server, bring it back up, and then put your service. So it's really the RTO and the RPO. Your RPO is 30 seconds, so it's syncing up data every 30 seconds. Here is a daily backup. So it's really, you know, depends on your need. So does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. The question was, if you send the VM that is encrypted over HTTPS and store it encrypted, you cannot run it encrypted in Azure. So how do you do that? Well, you can't. It has to be decrypted before you can run it. So in the scenario for backup, there is nothing like running it in Azure. You restore it to your on-prem. That's the experience. I'm protecting my server in Azure. When I want it back, I'm going to do a restore, which will bring it all back to either my server or a different server. There's no way to actually run it. That's the backup restore use case. If you want to actually run it, then you would use the gentleman here asked the question, Hyper-V Recovery Manager, that has a copy of your VM that's capable of running both encrypted and unencrypted in Azure. Of course, it'll take a little longer to start up. It may take up to half an hour to start up a VM if you have a 100 gig VM, because it has to decrypt the entire VM, and you have to give it the key at that time of failover, and then, yeah, it'll run. Okay? I think I'm running over. I think I want you to. I think we're running a bit behind time, so I'll hand it back to Islam.
Well, Steve, that was wonderful. So I believe everyone now, that actually, I mean, this session, I believe it's really important for everyone to understand where the DPM going and what is the future for DPM. So now, did anyone get the chance to install the Rollup Update 2 that has been released 2 weeks ago? You guys caught it before we pulled it.
Did any of you here get it in a place where some of your servers got updated and the others didn't before we pulled it? Okay,
great. Right.
That's a really dicey situation.
Right.
We'll have it out next week. I just talked to my team. They're on schedule. It's happening next week, Monday or Tuesday. I promise.
Abhi, go ahead. You have a question?
That's fair criticism. No, that's not a best practice. I'm very apologetic about that. And it's just, I don't know, I don't want to sound like making an excuse, but where it failed, there was never a test to have captured that. It was just, it failed somewhere. We made a change here. It failed in a stored procedure to handle tapes. We had made no changes to the tape path at all. But that's just engineering.
I'll take this actually, because we have been talking about Hyper-V and Hyper-V replica. I just want to mention something very, very quickly. This is not actually part of the Rollup Update 2. You can have it today. The DPM Protect Hyper-V Replica VM. How many of you today are actually using Hyper-V replica? Right? How many of you are using Hyper-V? How many of you are running VM? How many of you are running VMware? Yeah, got this guy. See these guys? All right, no problem. So today, actually, every time actually we deploy Hyper-V, and we already have this great feature of actually replica, Hyper-V replica VM, customers say, actually, can we use this feature today, and instead of actually using my IO for DPM to back up my stuff on production, actually, maybe I can take this actually and back up my stuff on offsite, right? So the scenario is actually you have a primary site, right, that actually you do Hyper-V replica over there, and you have a DPM here that actually go and back up your replica for VM. That's a great solution. Today it's supported. Just you need to have DPM 2012 R2. So if you're planning to do this and you couldn't because actually we didn't support it, we actually told you no. Today actually you can go ahead and do it. And here actually there is some stat in here. Oops, there is some stat about that, about our testing. You can actually take it as guidance. So again, this wasn't part of Rollup Update 2, but this is actually, after testing, we certified it. Go ahead.
When will R2 support 32
gig? Okay, that's really good news. Are you saying actually when the DPM 2003 will support 2003?
Yeah.
Right. So the lucky people that they got, that they got Rollup Update 2, they can do it today. Wait until the week of 19th, get
that's
the badge.
Next week.
And go ahead and deploy it. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
With 2003 up. I mean, the current.
2003 basically is what we have added support for.
So that's like SQL 2005, 2008,
no, not 2. We're talking about operating system 2003.
But he's right. There are workloads that they get also supported in the same bracket. Yes.
So what you used to have in 2010 and 2012 Service Pack 1, right, you will have it back.
All right, can I go get a hug right now?
Huh? I'll take hugs, see? You know what? What happened is you can... The kick business go like that. The hug business go like this.
No, but it really amazed me the amount of sort of kickback we got from the community on that. It was just, I was like, wow. The thing that surprised me is that, you know, in Microsoft, we keep moving on, right? Hey, you know, 2012, 2012 R2, yeah? 2003, like, okay, that's like end of life in next year. Why would anybody like... It's like that whack, you know, you go to this arcade thing that you get whack on the head, you know.
Right.
Yeah, ouch. We
heard this. You have a question?
Yes. Yeah. And what we also learned is backup actually moves even after. So like one of the customers I talked to, you say even after you go end of life officially, we still need to support our applications on 2003 for another year. So we need to keep backing it up. So, yeah, question there.
So, as lucky folks that actually got roll-off kits, will we be able to undo the damage and reapply it the new roll-off?
Yeah, because of our sort of accident, we have that scenario covered that, you know, people that have the update didn't face the issue, so didn't have to do the workaround where you need to update the tables, right? Or the guys that actually applied the workaround that we gave people that had that issue, and the ones that didn't get it, and the ones that have both, that have some servers that didn't get updated. So all of those things is what we are testing to make sure that everybody gets okay.
Awesome. So I believe also one of the great things that actually on the roll-up update 2 is actually supportability of always on cluster. And anyone today running always on. Beautiful. Anyone runs always on cluster. And I'm not expecting to see a lot of people running this scenario because this is actually goes on enterprise level and hosters, right? So the scenario of this, as you see here on the slide, that we hosters and actually big enterprise, they actually worry about their SLA and about downtime. So infrastructure, as usual, it's cluster SQL services, right? But they'd like to take their databases today and ship it and have a solution to replicate it somewhere else for a DR, right? Without the roll-up update 2, we couldn't do that, and I will show you this in a demo. After the, God bless the roll-up update 2, right, that would actually allow us to do this. So a lot of customers has abandoned the DPM for doing this now because the customers actually did saw the roll-up update 2 and we have been deploying this back. So I will go to my demo and I'll show you this quickly. This is not an introduction on SQL Always On, but I'll just test the stage and show everyone how SQL On is set up. Then we'll take it from here. Go ahead. It has been always truncated. Since 2005, since actually, I mean 2007, all of this did truncate the logs.
No, there's a bug in there. If you create a database without
full, we don't change the recovery mode. No. We keep it for the DB8 to.
Yeah, if you change it afterwards, then DBA won't truncate the logs.
Yeah, you can pull it out of the protection.
Exactly. Right. Well, actually, he is taking notes.
That's a feature. Okay. Yeah, we have heard there's some bugs also in that if a storage becomes unavailable, if the backup job fails, the logs don't get truncated and it just runs out of space. That's not fun either, so. If you don't truncate the log, if it has to truncate before you can ship it, yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's not a good place to be. No, I think the right way to answer that question is it should work like you expect. There are some issues with the product that's not doing the right thing. So, yeah, the right way is, you know, you use FOA. It should, when the backup comes, it should truncate the log, ship the log, and then start over again, comes the next backup cycle. That's how it should work. But obviously, there are some issues we need to go look at. So my promise to the next update rollup is what I call a workload rollup. Like, we'll fix Hyper-V with this rollup that's coming in July. The next one after in October will be all about making sure SQL and SharePoint work like they should. Yeah. The DPM DR, yeah, you can protect the one DR setup with another DPM. I think our customers do use that for branch office and home office scenario, that they want primary backup there on the branch, but they want to have all the backups consolidated in the head office. Yes, you can do it, yes. Yes, that's exactly why. They don't want tapes in the branch offices, so they get the tapes out of the DPM server.
So this is actually what we call it before. What we used to call it DPM to DPN for DR.
DR, it's called DPM DR. Yeah, yeah.
One
Well, the same capability that I mentioned is basically GFS on disk is what we need to go do. But I haven't heard that requirement from many people. They usually are okay with tapes because tapes are cheap and they have the thing that you can take it off and move it somewhere else, and they love doing that apparently. Even if it's a bit more expensive.
I totally agree with that, yeah.
That's good comment.
Right.
That's what we imagine Azure would be a good use case for that. For people that are okay with... You can't... Right. But is it okay if the hosted cloud is in Canada? Is that okay for the government in Canada to?
Sure, but we haven't been able to find partner data centers that want to guarantee that we have data retention policies in data
yeah.
recovery within Canadian national.
Right. Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, the Azure GM was coming to a review once, and he mentioned that, you know, every time I go there, I say, I need an Azure data center here. I need an Azure data center in Shanghai. I need one wherever I go. And you just can't sprout them up.
Can I have one in my basement?
Yeah, the licensing would work, but I think the issue is they need a service provider that can...
Right. That's what
the service provider could build. Yes. So our goal is to enable the service providers to be able to offer that capability. That's why you see WAP, all the Azure capabilities that they can host the same kind of services that you would get in Azure. Be a good model, that you want, you want. That will scale better. You can't have Azure in every country, every state.
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry, he's been having a hand up for a very long time. Yeah, the COM range, you mean the DCOM protocol?
If you go into DCOM and specify that the DVM is supposed to be locked down, only DVM will ignore that. So the only thing that DVM respects is if you lock down the entire RPC protocol, which is typically not a good idea. Anything being done on that, specifically when you're talking doing the having a hoster being your DR side of the
Yeah.
And then you need to open like 50,000
Yeah. We have heard this requirement from a service. So what I call backup as a service. So when they are backing up services in the back end, they need to open up all these port ranges. So they don't even go as far as that. They just don't like the fact that I have to open so many ports.
TSIM runs over TLS.
Yeah, so I think that is one of those, it's a technology that was built at the time where COM and this was not a problem, but now I think there are better technologies out there. So it is something on our roadmap to look at changing. But it's not the top list, by the way.
COM was a problem with DPM 2006
already.
They just ignored it.
Okay.
Great. So I'll go to just continue very quickly on the, and we already loaded for some Q&A. I already compiled all the questions also that have been asked in the Ask Expert session and the booths. So I do already have questions that he didn't see it. So I think actually you guys will like it. So if I take this, actually this is a SQL Server setup. I have two SQL Server instances. The first one actually is a SQL Server running on a cluster that already have two databases on Sales 1 and Sales 2. And this is actually, guys, a standalone SQL Server that's not clustered. And what we do is we're trying to set up an availability group or always on between the instance with that's actually already on node 1 or node 2. So this instance actually already hosted on a cluster. And we extend it, trying to extend it to a standalone. So imagine that actually you already have in production that you already have SQL Server instance, right, that on cluster that are actually on production. Then you extend this or straddle the availability group to offsite, right? So what happened before, DPM couldn't back up this scenario. But if you see today, actually, I'm able to back up this with DPM here. So if I go to, this is the Sales AG protection group. If I modify it, I couldn't, before rollup update 2, I couldn't see the Sales AG object. So today, actually, this is already happening, and you can do this. This topology or this design works between SQL cluster instance to a standalone instance or SQL cluster instance to another instance, so to another cluster instance. So that works today, and you see it is supported. So that actually wraps up this demo. I want to go back quickly to, is this 8, right?
Yeah.
To this, and I really like you guys to support me on this. Thank you. So, first of all, I'd like actually a lot of support from your side, right? Because my DPM team, DPMs are not actually in agreement with me, but let's see this. So, Shirish, I want to show you something here. If you can tell me, what do you think? I do have this DPM server. What do you think about that? I do have here, if I go to management, I do have two virtual disks, right? It's a virtual machine, man. And I do have agents, right? I'm backing up SQL and domain controller, but also I'm backing up SQL load, I'm backing up Active Directory, I'm backing up file services. What do you think about this?
Well, if I look at the top, it says cloudapp.net.
Well, this is my...
It's running in Azure. You're cheating.
Yeah. So... So that works fine, and I believe, imagine, put yourself in this scenario that actually you are an enterprise, and a lot of enterprises in the company, they do have a small point of presence somewhere, only for billing and administration, and their employee satellite, right? And some of Vancouver, some of them India, some of China, so I don't really need to be tied to this actually the server room or a building. I already have to have my servers, right? Because I do have custom workload that I need to run, and my employee needs that need to run. So if I show you this in Azure today, right? So this is the DPM setup that I have. I do have actually this DPM with a server, 4 core with 7 gigabytes, right? It has this ton of disks, each one actually 500 gig. I can actually load this with 16 terabytes.
You still have money left in your account?
I do have money. I have 156, but this is for like demo, by the way, that I got for free from Microsoft every month. So I do have...
I think fair point. Yeah, it is. So it is working in Azure.
So this is what I'm showing you. I mean, actually, I'm protecting a lot of my workload, right? And all my employees, just they have to VPN to my remote server room that I call it today, right? So guys, are you now by that? And these guys support me in all the questions that I'm coming because this is what I really need help. Are you going to give me guidance on a DPM server as IaaS?
Yeah, I mean, the demo clearly showed that functionally it does work. I mean, we actually have a CEC guideline for all server roles in the company to functionally validate that they can run in Azure. So the fact that he had a demo, entire demo running in Azure doesn't surprise me. It's been some customers have also said that. The problem that we are trying to go through is to make sure that we have what I call a deployment guidance around how you would do that. There have been customers that have come and told me, you know, I have an office like this, and I want to put my entire office in Azure. And I want to just make everything work like it works on-prem. So what we want to go through is the set of questions that are listed below. Like, what should be the deployment guidance? Like, what's what IS size VM you should get? How many data sources can it protect? Because there are certain infrastructure limits in Azure. For example, a VM can only have a certain size VHD attached to it. There are limitations on NICs. You can only have one NIC in an IS VM. Does that matter? In on-prem, people spend a lot of time trying to shape backup traffic to go on a different network. If people expect the same to happen in Azure, they'll be disappointed. So I think it should work. What we are trying to go through is have a very detailed, like a TechNet article or a blog post that tells you how you should go do that and what you should expect. And once we have that ready, and we'll have some of the MVPs also look at it, we'll publish that, and then we'll basically bless it. Right now, it's not supported. If you go to the TechNet page, and he's going to try this exercise again with the support team. And see if they get that he's actually got a virtualized deployment.
So very much today, actually, when you call Microsoft support and tell them, actually, I do have an issue in DPM, they ask you already two questions. Is this physical or virtual? Right? Anyone actually called Microsoft support for VM, for DPM? Right. I call them actually for the past, if I count them, I call them actually 1,000 times.
So yeah, we are on path to supporting this. So it's not tied to an update roll-up because we don't believe we'll have to make any fixes. We just have to make sure we have some guidance. Yes, question. Yes, please. No, that's fair.
It's good, but let me comment on this, and actually my next question is to Ashish. Okay, that's really good to get to know this. Is DPM going to protect VMware? And my question is actually for that reason. Microsoft is actually going very, very aggressive, funding VMware migration hypervisor VMware migration to Hyper-V.
Yeah.
Customers today, that's great, but actually I do already have an existing solution from VMware, right, backing up, and I would like to consolidate all my solution on only one backup solution, right?
No.
Do you have anything, but today actually when we sell Hyper-V, we sell EVMM, right, to manage Hyper-V behind that. And people, they buy System Center licenses. So are you guys going to enable both? VMM have done it to manage vSphere from VMM. What's your take on that?
Can I respond to that, and you can add to it if it helps your response? I agree with you completely. In fact, most of the System Center TSPs I talk to, they lead with Config Manager and Ops Manager. They don't talk about DPM. That is true. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. VMM did that.
I'll tell you the reason behind that.
I don't know. I can't comment.
They're trying to make VMM as light as it can to manage the VMM, the virtual machine infrastructure. But you still have the tool, external tools. You can do that from Microsoft. So they didn't leave you in the dark. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm
really shy to present the VM for my client. Yeah, you should wait. I think that's fair. But I've heard this from many customers. And I think the reason is more and more people are, because the other changes we made it part of System Center. People want to move to Hyper-V. There are more and more people asking about that. And I'll be honest with you, DPM is an exception in that. It's an exception in many things, actually, frankly. And it's not because of any particular reason. It's just because for the last couple of years, there was not a lot of investment in the product. We were confused about, are we trying to be the best backup product in the industry, or are we trying to be strategic to Microsoft? I think that direction change took place, and now we believe it's very strategic to the company, because when people want to move to your new cloud, they want it to be protected, and they also want hybrid protection, which well, we want to be the best bin breed backup for Microsoft. That's the goal. We don't want to give anybody a reason to choose when they have a perfectly valid free alternative in the platform. We want to make sure that you don't have a reason to go do that. So feature gaps feel close. Well, as I was telling earlier, we're going away from Big Bang releases. We're not going to say come up, you know, the next release of Windows Server. My goal actually is to accrue as much value as I can to the current R2 customers. And in fact, I've convinced many of the teams that are collaborating with DPM to adopt the same model, like the VSS team, the file server team, Windows proper, actually, to say, hey, we cannot tell people to move to the next version of product, at least on the production side. I may still come back and say, you know what, can you please move your DPM host onto the latest version of Windows? That might still be something we may have to go do, but at least you don't have to touch your protected servers.
I believe.
I agree. There's lots of feature gaps in the product that has crept up. But like I tell you, you know, I'm an engineer. You know, if you put resources behind it, it's not none of these things are technically hard to go do, frankly. Great. Every single thing that you hear the best product does today, we could do that. It's not hard. It's actually not hard at all. So we'll get there. I don't think I can tell you it's going to be, you know, there anytime soon, but it'll be there. We'll work on it. By the way, this other question he had, protecting VMware, I'm going to actually seriously go and think about that. This is something that I hadn't thought about would be such a big ask from the audience, but I've heard many people asking that.
Can I get you another question to think about?
Yeah, let's. I think you take a pause.
I'll get back to the question, actually. How about reporting? And you see those these things here?
Yeah, I don't know what that means, Islam.
I'll talk to you later about that, not on the mic. But what do you think about reporting? Are we going to enhance this reporting then?
Yeah, so to reporting, my philosophy is like I feel this is an area where we should not reinvent the wheel in DPM. There's enough intelligence out there of what people want to do with reports. There's enough innovation done in Ops Manager where you can collect all the reports and have all the views. We just need to get the views in DPM right and enable innovation outside the product to build reports that they want. And not previously the approach was, we'll hear from you guys and we'll build the best report in, you know, push the button and you get a report. My experience has been you can never get that right. You can use that as a sample maybe, but people always want it their own way. In fact, like our biggest customer, MSIT internally, has an entire framework of reporting that we could never imagine building that in the product. And I don't know if it's the right thing to even do. So my approach to reporting is really collaborate with the experts in the community and also with the ops manager team. I hear that's the gold standard. They got it right. They have the right views, and you can aggregate everything, and it just works. So we're just going to copy that and just put all of what you need in the DPM views. Sure. That's the approach.
I have seen a question here. Do you have a question? Colin, do you have a question?
No.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So just something to think about from an ecosystem perspective, how that plays long term as well. Right?
Yes.
Being a good partner now. Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, as a partner, how would it? I mean, right now we have a pretty collaborative relationship. We don't threaten them a whole lot. They were in the Hyper-V session along with DPM talking about what they do. You know, pretty much all the service providers I talk to, bar none, say, you know, hey, Veeam's our choice. You know, I know we have to pay money for that, but that's worth it. It's what I need, and they work, and there's no reason why I should change it. So, yeah, we have an uphill battle there. But, yeah, once we get the feature gaps fixed, then it'll be an interesting conversation because then the money is going to hurt.
Okay. So.
Any chance that you'll acquire Veeam and just bring this as a new DBM?
So, no comment. You mean the current console is not good enough for you, sounds like?
Yes.
Okay. The DPM COM console is not good, huh?
It doesn't aggregate all the DPM servers, actually, if you have four.
He didn't mention SCOM, and there might be some organizations like us when we get this new department lead that says, I'm sorry, or didn't he say I'm sorry, but we're using SolarWinds, and you guys cannot use SCOM. It has to go.
Wow. But it's all one suite. Would it be okay if we fix what SCOM is? But you'll have many DPM servers. You mean if you had one DPM server, that will make sense, right? Yes. I think where we'll get that, by the way, if we have consolidation of the UX, for example, if you had, like, today the problem where you have to go to multiple consoles and why we had SCOM is because you have many DPM servers. If you didn't have that, let's say, imagine I could wave my wand and said, you know, you have just one DPM server, and you just keep adding storage as you need it. That would be your console. We don't have that today. Your DPM server has scale-up limits to the storage it attaches to. So every time you have more data sources, you need to spin up another server. That's a design limitation, which is why we had to put another console on top of that. If you were to fix it the right way, we would scale the UX in a manner that you wouldn't have to do that. Like all the other products, like Symantec or Veeam, any of those, once you set up the backup server, you just keep scaling out the storage. You don't need to spin up new servers. So that's the reason why. But it's not the right solution, I agree. But I hadn't heard people complaining a whole lot about this central console.
Okay. So I'll get back to you. How about actually protecting SharePoint using SQL? That's a problem.
Yeah.
SQL always on.
I think as I mentioned earlier, right, then the roll-up after the next one, the UR3, the UR4 roll-up that's in October, I've set the target for the team to be all about workloads.
Sure.
So the next roll-up is UR3, which will go out in July. That'll have all the enhancements I showed you, the demo I showed you, and any fixes from the dedupe team. That'll get you reliable and backup and dedupe. The one after that, we want to focus on workload. So that's what I heard that. I've also heard, by the way, SQL 2014 support.
Yeah.
Yes?
More recovery points,
like beyond?
It's locked to 64.
Yeah. What would you like it to be? More than 90 days. Primary protection. Why is that? For recovery purposes? Or you mean you need to go that far back to retrieve files? No, I'm looking for the scenario. Because typically what we have seen is the recoveries are in the 90% of the recoveries are in the last week of people looking for data that they used. Oh, wow. So it's the retention period, okay. But could you not use that as secondary protection, or is that not? I see. Right. Finding it is harder. Right. I see. I see.
Sure.
Okay.
So let me get the question and I'll get back to you.
Here's the question.
All right, go ahead if you want.
Could consolidate just allow a long time to be disk and then just either the shelf that we have to go buy VTL or a VTL
Yeah, you mean, but VTL is disk, right? Oh, I see. So if Dedup gave you all the saving, you could increase the retention to be much longer. Well, that depends on how much Dedup savings you get. I can't get the Dedup team to commit to a number yet. Yeah, tiered. Okay. Okay.
How about,
it's a good suggestion.
Yeah. How about generic VSS? And I mean by generic VSS, DPM, they had a great, great project in 2010. I don't know if you remember, guys, that we will work with other partners like Oracle and other people that they have workload runs on VSS, on Windows, that they will offer the VSS, then actually after that DPM will certify this. So when you run your agent on the Windows, you'll see, oh, I see I have an Oracle database, I have a DB2 database, and I have all of that. What happened for this project?
Yeah, like everything else, it was put on hold. But I think this comment goes back to non-Microsoft in a bigger sense. Like you ask VMware, this is on a much bigger scale. You want to protect third-party workloads. That's when you need the generic.
But that's still actually running on NDMP, Windows platform. Huh? That's still running on Windows platform.
True. I'm not denying the scenario. I'm just saying in terms of all the things we need to go do, this is clearly something we'd go do. NDMP support is, again, you know, for NAS devices, anything that exposes SMB3. So we don't have it on the immediate roll-up plans, but it's something that we will take. If enough people ask, we'll go fund it.
Sure. All right. I think there's only 2 minutes, I believe. You guys, any questions?
Go we'll ahead. Have that lady who's up there.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's 850, yeah.
Yeah,
you're glad you remember that one, okay. Yeah, we're fixing that too.
Right.
Why did it take you so long to get here, man?
It's all engineering. It's going up to 2 TB. We're trying to get that done sooner. It'll come before the long-term retention, let me put it this way. That's something we are doing much sooner than that. But has that, like, I know people have said that, but I haven't heard that as loudly as I heard the LTR one. The 850 hitting the 850 GB limit, because you can always split up your data sources.
So can you repeat the question, Shreesh?
Oh, sorry, the question was, what are you doing about the 850 gigabyte limit that's there in Azure for a protected data source? Any data source you protect to Azure, what I showed in the demo, cannot be more than 850 gigabytes. And that has been a sore point in some of the customers that have told us. And the answer is, yes, we are working on that to increase it. The first increase is going to be 2 terabytes, and you want to go to VHDX where you'll get up to 64 terabytes.
You have a question?
A number of other product lines are increasing availability of non-domain joint clusters for various Hyper-V and such. Do you have plans to support either clusters that are joined to foreign domains or non-domain joint cluster connections at any point?
I have no idea, actually.
So currently, DPM, as you know, they're actually supporting some workload with a certificate base. I think Hyper-V in cluster is not really one of the supported, as well as Exchange. We should talk to the DPM god to bless this and to them actually.
It's not very cluster friendly. That much I do know that people have said DPM is not very cluster friendly. So maybe one of the gaps that we need to go look at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are you guys working with shared services?
Sorry.
Shared services?
As in the company or?
As in government?
I work for a number of customers.
I see. Right. So, any more questions?
We can stay here longer. We are. It looks like.
Right. I think actually the recording will end. But Shasharsha, please do the eval. We only accept 5 and up.
There's no up after 5.
so please go ahead on that. I really, really thank everyone here. Thanks, Shreesh.
No, you're welcome.
That.
Hey, thanks, guys.
And hopefully we'll see you next TechEd. I really love the audience here. I love TechEd. And I wish they have a weekly TechEd. to talk to these nice people that came here. We'll hang around here if you guys have a question for me or Shirish. Please come in.